Welcome to the Bright Vibe Podcast. At Bright Vibe, we believe everyone deserves to be happy. But in today's world, everywhere you turn, there is division and negativity. At Bright Vibe, we have created a global movement to bring 8 million people together who are inspired to live bright, live bold, and share bright vibes. Alone, it can be hard to change, but together we can change the world. Welcome to the Bright Vibe Podcast. So in today's show, we have Donna Zajan. She's a master certified coach, and she's an author of the book that just landed, which is Who Do You Want to Be on the Way to What You Want? So let's get into the show. Well, Donna Zajan, welcome to the show today. So happy to have you on.
Thanks, Matt. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
I am as well. I'm super excited. You know, I'm a big fan of your work and obviously your husband's work, David Emerald. And so I couldn't be more excited to have this conversation today. I think it's going to be super enlightening for people. I know this work has touched my life for at least the last 15, if not 20 years, and been so important in the relationships I have and the work I do. And so I want to just jump right in. You've got a new book out.
Yes,
it's called,
just came out.
And I love the title, and I'm super curious about the title. Who Do You Want to Be on the Way to What You Want? That's a big title to me. Who do you want to be? Because I'm like, I know how old I am, and I'm still trying to figure out some of that. Who do I want to be? So where did the title come from? Who do you want to be? And what exactly does that mean, I guess?
Yes. Well, that's the evocative question, I guess. You know, I started writing several years ago, but really got writing in earnest right when the pandemic hit. And So I'm a pretty focused person, and I just kept trying to come up with a title before I even started writing, and none of them worked. And I got frustrated, and finally my editor said, Donna, will you let this go? The title will appear as you write.
Right.
And so it was actually my daughter who read the first manuscript, and she knew I was struggling with title. And toward the end of the book, I wrote in the dialogue of two of the characters, I said, the one gentleman, Ted, which we'll share more about who Ted is in this story. He says to Sophia, the other main character, he says, Sophia, the larger question is, who do you want to be on the way to what you want? And my daughter circled that and she said, Mom, that's pure gold.
Yeah.
So I held that. I held it. And we got closer to the end, ready to publish. And I started working with that as the title. And, you know, my inner critic says, whoa, that's way too long. And, but then I warmed up to it and people started going, yeah, well, isn't that the question for us all today is, yes, we want to think about what we want. You know, I'm a professional coach. I ask all the time, what do you want? Mm-hmm. But the real question now that I think has emerged in the history of this world in a way that's very front and center is how do we want to be with ourselves? How do we want to be in relationship? Mm-hmm. No matter what it is we say we want, how do we want to be
want? Yeah. And it's, you know, we could literally spend hours just on this title and what that, the ramifications of what that means, right? Because I'm very self-inquisitive of myself and analyze and kind of think about who am I and what do I want to do with my time left on the earth? And, you know, how do I show up and how do I want to impact people's lives? And I love this, who do you want to be on the way to what you want? Because we all want something, right? Whether it's it's to raise healthy kids or world peace or just to, you know, make it to the end of this day. Whatever that is, we all want something. Who are we? It's kind of like the phrase, you know, it's not the destination, it's the journey is kind of what it reminds me of, right?
Very similar, isn't it? Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of ancient wisdom, really, for us to consider our beingness, you know, and that's a phrase maybe that some people, especially my coach, they go, Donna, I really not sure what you mean when you say my beingness,
right.
But it is the journey of how we are with ourselves, how we treat ourselves, as well as how we treat others. What are our values in the way we're being with others as we are navigating what it is we want, whether it's something in our family, at work. And so that's really the point of this question that's in the story. This is a leadership story. This is a teaching story. A number of characters are grappling with that question, that sense of beingness.
And I have been a fan of you know, your work, and I've been a fan of, you know, the
the mission you guys are on for a long time. But for people that aren't familiar, because this is all your work, if I'm not mistaken, is all based on the drama triangle and then the empowerment dynamic and then the stories and coaching around that. And so if people have never heard of the drama triangle or the empowerment dynamic, how would you kind of frame that from a high level standpoint so people can get an understanding of what, you know, we kind of just jumped into a conversation here, but so that they can get an understanding of really, because I think it's so important in today's, not in just today's world, I think it's so important in life, and no matter what stage you're at, to understand what causes drama, because it causes stress, which causes all kinds of bad things in your life. What causes drama, and then basically what's the antidote, and then how does this book and the story relate to it? So I know those are all the questions. We'll probably spend the rest of that's a lot of stuff. So let's start with what in the world is the drama triangle and what's the empowerment dynamic?
Okay, great. So the triangle, 3 points, was first named by Dr. Stephen Cartman, who lives in the Bay Area in the early 1970s, late 1960s. He a psychiatrist and started noticing that there's 3 primary ways that we human beings respond when we're in conflict. Whatever the conflict with ourselves, with other people, with out there circumstances. And he named those 3 characters as that we play. It's not who we are, but they're a persona, if you will, or a role, he said, that we take on. The first one is we feel victimized by the situation. There's something we don't like and we don't want. The second one is the persecutor, he said. This is the problem. This is what is causing us angst. And the third one, when that dynamic is set up between the victim and the persecutor roles, he says a third persona or role shows up, and that's one of the rescuer, the part of us that wants to help and please and solve the conflict. So with those 3 roles, and we can say a lot more about those roles as we develop the conversation, but they became very instrumental in the human development field over the last 50, 60 years. And why I believe it has really had a lot of staying power is that people get it right away when they understand, like you said, I see myself when I disengage and stand back and feel powerless. Poor me is what we say when we're in that victim-y mindset. Or we lean against and we try to control and the part of us that wants to take charge so that we'll never be a victim. Well, that's the fiery persecutor in us, whether we know we're doing it or not, it is that desire to lean against and take charge. And then there's a part of us that doesn't want to see conflict and wants to please. And I'm a recovering pleaser, recovering rescuer. So I really know that role well. I don't like to see conflict, so I try to be helpful. So that's the drama triangle role. And so David, who you spoke about, David Emerald, 2 or 3 decades ago, learned about the drama triangle in a therapy session after he was losing his marriage and suddenly lost his dad. And as he shared it with me, which I also knew about because of my background in mental health nursing, I knew about the drama triangle. And he said, there must be a better way. There must be a more positive aspect to us. And he literally, in a prayerful moment, said, God, I want to surrender my victim stance in the world, but I got to know what is the alternative.
Right.
And out of that epiphany, he had the realization that the word creator came to him, that he can create and he can choose who he wants to be in life, no matter what shows up. So he was chatting with me about it. And I said, David, write that down. That's very powerful. So we started pondering, well, what's the positive aspect to the persecutor, that part of us that wants to lean in and take charge? And he named that positive role, that antidote to the persecutor, is a challenger. We want to challenge ourselves to grow. We want to have the will to step up when we need to. And we want to look at circumstances we not like, not as a need to control them, because we don't control very well, do we, Matt? Controlling doesn't work. But we can learn and grow and develop that challenger in us. And then the alternative to the rescuer, that helper role, he named the coach. And not a professional coach, but the supportive role is that we can coach ourselves. We can inquire and learn of what is it I do want, or we can be coach-like with others. The rescuer steps in and does for the other what the other can do for themselves and intervenes. The coach stands back and is still supportive, but it's, you know, has a whole different set of questions that, again, we can get into here in just a minute. Mm-hmm. So the drama triangle roles are a summary, even an archetypal look at how we human beings react to anxiety, fear, things we don't want, don't like when we're in conflict, basically. The empowerment dynamic, which David named as a compilation of those three more positive roles, creator, challenger, and coach, he said, now we are empowering ourselves. So he named it the empowerment dynamic. Mm-hmm. And after a few days of deciding that's the name, he came out of meditation and he said, Donna, my goodness, it's got a name. It's Ted. Mm-hmm. So that was about 18, 19 years ago. And little did we know that our life's work would be bringing alive our positive aspects of ourselves, that there is a more deeply conscious goodness in us that we forget about when we are scared and we go reactive, when we get stuck racing around the drama triangle. And that's what our work is about, is how to nurture and bring the best out of us and understand that we have a ability to influence others, to coach, support, challenge, and bring the best out in other people.
I saw it for the first time in an executive leadership program, and I think it was around 2010 is when I saw the work in a little PowerPoint presentation, and it wasn't even by anybody that had been trained or wasn't David himself. It was, and I just remember thinking when it was talking about the victim, the persecutor, and the rescuer, I remember, like, I always hated to feel like a victim. So I would typically mm-hmm. lean into the persecutor, but ultimately I felt like, so when they were doing the roles, right, they were going like, here's a victim and this is the language and here's a persecutor and this is language. And then I was like, I don't want to be either one of those. So I'm going to go with option number three, because I didn't, you know, you hadn't heard about the rest of it yet. The empowerment dynamic, yes. You know, this was, and then they got the rescuer. I was like, oh, that's definitely me. That's like the hero, right? The rescuer comes exactly. in to save the day. And then I was listening to it and I was like, okay, I can vibe with this. I'm the rescuer. You know, I help people out, da, da, da. And then they got to the end. The definition of the rescuer, and they said rescuers often create or attract victims to justify their position, right? To justify, and I was like, oh no, that's not good. Right? I was like, creates victims. And then it was like I was in a car accident or something, and my life flashed before my eyes, because all of a sudden every time every relationship or every friendship that I'd ever been in that went off, you know, that went off the track and ended up in drama or conflict, I was like, yeah, I can kind of see how I might have.
It all made sense.
Right. It all made sense. It got very clear very quickly. Now, I'll say that, you know, this is a practice, so it's taken a long time to, and I continue to, you know, use it as a practice. It's a daily or weekly thing for me, but it is very, it's kind of like, you go down, it just goes level, it goes deeper and deeper, right? And a lot of this.
It does, it has a lot of levels, yes.
Yeah, and a lot of it I found was internal, right? It's you know, this victim, persecute, and rescue, when you first look at it, it's like, oh, this is how I interact with other people, or this is how they interact. But ultimately, a lot of these roles are happening almost simultaneously within us, or they switch, not simultaneously, it's like one, two, three, one, two, three, right? This is like.
Very quickly.
It's a lot of internal work, right?
Yeah, I love your story of the first recognition of learning about this. And I think that story really illustrates why I love the drama triangle TED role so much, is mm-hmm. because it really accelerates a person's ability to self-observe and to understand fairly quickly some life patterns or some reactive mm-hmm. habits that they possibly were not aware of. And in terms of change and human development, the more we can accelerate our ability to personally observe and self-observe, or I often say awaken our inner observer, because mm-hmm. you were doing it, you were having that experience as you were watching the PowerPoint. So you were really activating your inner observer. And because Dr. Cartman named these roles as archetypal, meaning they're really universal,
right,
human beings do them. And it's been it's been verified now in the world of psychology that these are our main three strategies. So it sounded really familiar to you, Matt.
Right, of course.
And it awakened, you know, which is key in how I work with this in our coach training and our programs, is that we really want to normalize the awareness that this happens to everybody. This isn't just you. And there's something that is really supportive in understanding that that idea that, oh, I'm normal. Wow, I still do it. But, oh, maybe there's nothing wrong with me. That
right.
Sometimes, you know, a dirty little secret is we privately think there's something really wrong with us.
Uh-huh,
we might not entertain that idea
I did
too
for a long. I did for a long time. And now I realize I'm perfect, right? My wife tells me that all the time.
Now
right?
You're normal.
I thought there was something wrong with me. And then I got married and verified that something's wrong with me, right?
You're so funny. Yeah. So that's what I love about the drama triangle. But if we don't have a place to go mm-hmm. that activates our the best of us, so Lincoln said there are better angels, our true essence of who we are is conscious, innate, intelligent beings based upon deep goodness.
Oh, I like that.
You know, if we do not activate that aspect of us, what can happen, we get stuck in the drama triangle and the ego says, oh, you shouldn't be doing this now that you know about this. Stop being a persecutor. Stop rescuing when it's not yours to do, or stop feeling this victim-y mentality. And we actually can make it worse.
Interesting.
By only partially waking up to those roles. We must have, or at least I have found out in 20 years now of coaching, is to activate the positive aspects of ourselves so that we kind of pull those forward. We nurture those aspects rather than being a problem to fix and making ourselves an ongoing project.
Mm-hmm.
We start asking different questions. We start observing the part of us that is based upon the goodness. That inner wisdom is how we work with sharing the work. And then, you know, what kinds of exercises, what kind of insights do we coach to and work with in order to expand and nurture our inner creator essence, our goodness,
mm-hmm.
to expand our will and desire to create and have that part of us manifest. And that inner coach in us that is curious about, I wonder what steps I do need to take. And those are really important. That's an important caveat on how to work with this work. Because if we just learn about the drama triangle, we can actually use it as warfare against
right.
ourselves and activate that inner critic and inner persecutor even more. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, totally. And I hadn't thought of it from that perspective, but it does make sense. And I've caught myself doing that before. Or even better, when two people have learned about the drama triangle, the empowerment dynamic, then they can use it against each other, right? Because then they
against
can say,
each other, say, oh, you're
stop
just
showing
being
up as a persecutor, quit being a victim, and that only makes things worse, right?
Oh, it really does. What do we have to do? We've got to defend ourselves,
right?
Then.
Exactly.
And so that's more common than one might think of how that happens if you do not understand the nature and the philosophy of positive psychology. To nurture that aspect of us. And that's the empowerment dynamic roles, mirrors positive psychology concepts.
Very, very interesting. And then, and you said something in there about questions and how you help people get to these higher ways of thinking or higher ways of being, or these, do you call them roles? Or is it really, when you look at the creator, the challenger, and the coach, are those roles or are those, what are they exactly?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yes, in terms of keeping the way we teach the material consistent, we talk about them as roles. When I get more time to work with someone, I speak more about our creator essence.
Essence, okay.
Our deep, intelligent, wise, good self that's in us and it's in everyone else. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's more of an essence. It's the truth of who we are. So that's a great question. Okay. But when we initially start, you know, if we just have a little time to
right.
share the material,
the
we call
roles.
Them all roles. Yes.
Okay. And then what questions, I guess, help people focus on that, their creator essence? I mean, is there one or two or three questions that kind of help people
for sure.
shift or realign?
Yeah. So the victim to creator shift is what we call it. The victim mentality to the creator mindset. is there's two or three core questions that we recommend that we paused. First of all, we have to catch ourselves racing around or stuck in the drama triangle, and we can pause. That's why meditation, contemplative exercises, contemplative practices are so essential to help calm ourselves. Because when we're stuck in that drama triangle, you know, we can really get into that amygdala hijack. We can get so reactive, literally our neurology can take us over. Mm-hmm. So when we pause, can breathe and ask ourselves, wow, what do I really want here? Given the situation, I may not like the situation, but I'm still a choice of how I respond to the situation. What do I really want? The second question I recommend is, you know, because oftentimes we don't know what we want.
Right.
We just know whatever's going on we don't like, and we don't want that. But we don't usually often know what we want. But another question is, what do I care about right now? And that could get to the beingness part of us. I might care about really being kind. Even though there's a lot of drama going on in this team or this family at the moment, I care about being kind. Or I care about listening. Or I care about being respectful. So those are the kind of the first two questions I say. What do I really want here? What do we really care about?
And that's interesting because I have known about the what do I really want since I was, you know, in introduced to the work and have spent time around, you know, the two of you, but then just being around the work and life, right? Everywhere you turn, there's the potential for drama or potential for conflict. Mm-hmm. But when I say that, what do I really want? That feels like it's coming from my head. That feels like a mental conversation. And I think it's the first step, but then I had not really engaged or I'm sure I've learned it, but just didn't remember the, what do I care about question, because that feels more heart-centered or it feels like I'm feeling, right? So one's like,
very much.
Well, yeah, what do I think I want? And then what do I care about feels more like,
yes,
you know, because I remember myself coaching myself. I was in a board meeting once with a gentleman, and he was just, to me, he was a little bit braggadocious and just kept going on and on and on. He dominated the meeting, and I was so angry and so frustrated, and I just didn't know what to do with it. And I remember getting in my car and driving, and I was just mad, and I was like, but I was still focused on the what. I did get to the what do I care about, but I didn't know to ask myself the question. But, you know, the first thing I thought about when it was like, what do I want, was I want him to shut up, right? I was just like, I want him to shut up. I want him to quit being an asshole. I want him to, you know, I just had this whole laundry list. And then I was like, well, that's not really helping, right? And then ultimately I said, well, what do I really want is I actually want to have a functional relationship with this guy and understand what he's saying and have him understand. I want to actually be able to communicate and feel like we're being productive instead of just feel like that we're not being non-productive. And I think I was actually starting to tap into what do I care about was really I cared about the relationship more than the outcome of the things that we were talking about. It wasn't about what we were talking about in the meeting. I was frustrated because I didn't feel like I had a good connection, a good understanding. It didn't feel like we were communicating. It felt like we were just talking, if that made sense.
Such a great example of an everyday application of this work. And especially with how frustrated you just recounted that you were, you know, that's when our neurological system just takes us over. And it's very difficult in the moment to understand how the amygdala hijack, the neurological, that prevents us from being able to have our brains and hearts come online. So there's a lot of coaching we do around how to remove yourself from the situation or how to get to your place, get yourself to a more neutral place so you can reflect and ask these questions that you just recounted that you got to. In this book, I write much more about heart-centered work and that to activate our hearts about what we care about as our guiding pathway to support that creator essence, that wisdom. We always know if we can tap into that guidance of our deep inner wisdom will bring us to what we really want, to what we really care about. Yes, sometimes, especially in the Western world, because we're so cognitive focused, the question of what do I want is extremely useful, but it is more mental. And when our prefrontal cortex has gone offline because of our neurological hijack, rarely do we know what we want. We just know what we don't want.
Right.
I want that guy to shut up. And now in the story and in the book, I'm introducing ways to yes, work with our mental, but work more with our bodies and our somatic and our heart to guide us to how to really live from a deep place of the empowerment dynamic of our creator, challenger, coach essence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to elaborate on something you said a moment ago, if it's all right to go back to that
inner
work.
Please do.
Yes. So I had an epiphany a few years back when I about this inner work and that all of these triangles are operating inside of us, mm-hmm. irrespective of what anyone says to us or that sort of thing. And what it was a Sunday afternoon. It was a beautiful day here in the Northwest. And I was walking out into an area that has just beautiful homes and beautiful gardens. And as I was walking and observing the gardens, this inner persecutor says to me, I hear it.
Yeah.
Why do you come out here? You just upset yourself because you know you'll never have the beautiful gardens like that are out here.
Right.
And because I love gardening, I have a mm-hmm. wonderful little home, a small little garden. And as I heard that inner persecutor, there was another sub character, you know, sometimes I have a whole inner persecutor committee going at me at once, right. You know, and another voice said, oh, she's right. Why don't you just turn around and go back home and not keep making things worse by looking at these beautiful gardens? And I literally, Matt, turned around.
Wow.
And so the rescuer in me mm-hmm. was activated to right. say, remove yourself, go away, don't keep right. doing this. Why do you do this? So the pleasing, trying to get away from the conflict. But I was victimizing myself by this really deep inner critic voice. You see how all three of those yeah. characters showed up in that one little story? Well, it turned out to be a pretty big epiphany because sure. before I got back to my car, I stopped and I said, wow. Listen to you all.
Yes.
What is it I really want here? And that activated that creator inner goodness in me that wants awe, that wants joy, that wants love, wants beauty. That's why I came out here to walk.
Right.
So I asked myself, I inquired, I coached myself to say, how could I create a different experience so that I could enjoy this day and these gardens? And I turned around, and within a few yards, there was a beautiful trellis of red roses. And I leaned down and I held that rose in my hand, and I smelled it, and I just took in the moment. And it was such a moment of awe and beauty. And what I realized is that nothing changed. The gardens Right. were the same. The temperature was the same. Everything was the same. Only thing that changed was my mindset, my perspective, and my desire of what did I really care about? What did I really want? Mm-hmm. And I changed that my experience in a matter of a few minutes. And that's an example of, it was so real to me, it still is, mm-hmm. as an example of how these roles operate inside of us with our relationship to ourself. Hence, the title of the book, Who Do I Want to Be?
Right.
In what I want here, I wanted a spring, summer, beautiful walk, but I changed how I was being as I activated self-observing these roles going on inside of me. And that's, again, why I love the work, because it accelerates our ability to understand ourselves, our consciousness of what is occurring in the moment.
So, and as I'm hearing you say that, the question that arises for me is, because I have the same monkey mind that everyone else does as far as the chatter and the, you know, the voices and the dramas that's happening inside. In fact, at one point I spent 30 days in India in a silent retreat where we didn't talk to anybody. And so the only voices I was hearing were yes. the conversations in my head. And by about day 10, I was just like literally going, shut up. I was just like, shut up. I'm just so sick of hearing you guys talk, right? But
I so identify with that. I haven't done 30, but I've done 10 days. And I remember on about the eighth day going back to my room, taking a pillow and just hitting the wall saying, shut up.
I did this. I was out walking and I think I literally was talking to myself out loud, like just holding my head saying, just shut up, stop talking.
Yes.
Why? But my question arises because I didn't think about it then and I only have thought about it in this minute, but What causes those voices? Is that just a, I'm not trying to go down too much of a rabbit trail here, but why on earth do we have those voices in our head? And why are they always, you know, for a lot of us, I think, have a tendency for those voices to have a fairly negative slant to them. Why is that?
Yes, isn't that a great question? Well, first of all, I think it's because we are conscious beings, mm-hmm. that we have the capacity for this internal voice. And we have a language. I mean, there are animals that are very, very intelligent, that there's science and work that's being done, that there is some way for some animals to distinguish. But we have a language. And so we use language then to manifest meaning. And why would that meaning be more negative, mm-hmm. than we'd really like, you know, as we start listening? Yeah. You know, there's a lot of work being done about that. But I, for me, what I've discovered from reading a lot of the psychology and from my experience with self and 20 years of coaching is the negativity bias that is now a big part of the psychology world, how we default, mm-hmm. to that inner persecutor, that negativity is an evolutionary aspect to us that does protect us. That if we did not purposely look out, our brains look for patterns. Mm-hmm. And when they see a pat, when our brain sees or senses a pattern that's not right, it's a way to alert us that something out there is wrong. And so if we defaulted to only seeing the good,
right.
to only, oh, everything's just fine in the forest or whatever, and our ancestors walking through it did not have a sensitivity and alertness to danger, mm-hmm. they didn't survive. Okay. So I believe it's absolutely an important survival mechanism. But here, now, we're at a time in history, we're at a crossroads where our goodness must come forward. We must update our operating system so that how we relate and listen to one another, especially when there's major conflict, mm-hmm. where there's violence, where there's countries bombing countries.
Right.
We've got to understand this negativity bias that got us to where we are, but it is not going to get us to where we are. It must go with 7, 8, 9 billion people on our planet, and our planet not well. Mm-hmm. So that's a bigger maybe answer than you were
I just and now that you're saying that, that makes sense, because it's kind of like the reptilian part of your brain that's kicking in, the fight or flight, that's like, I've got to run or I'm going to die, right? You know, the bear's, mm-hmm. chasing me, or the wolf is, you know, there's a wolf or a bear or something. And it's, but it's just, it got, I'm going to say it's kind of like a bad hangover or something. It's like we just never let that part of it go, because we live in a, you know, I don't, for most of us, you know, I'm sure for the people tuning in to listen and watch the show, you know, we probably do have enough food, and we do have a roof over our heads and clean water, and we have, mm-hmm. clothes. I mean, we have all of the kind of the basics covered, but it's like our mind didn't catch up. It's like our, or that part of our mind that functions just really didn't catch up and says, okay, actually you're safe. There's very few things to be afraid of that are going to actually kill you in this space.
Right.
But we just didn't, we haven't acclimated to that.
Really, the history of the world until just the last few decades was truly about survival for the overwhelming majority of people. It was shelter, it was food, it was, mm-hmm. safety from predators, as you said. But especially in the last 200 years, and now dramatically in the last 20 years with our, mm-hmm. smartphones, where we expose ourselves possibly to negativity all across the globe, not just on our street, you know, or our families. Now we know about negativity everywhere, and it's really affecting us as human beings. And so there is a choice point here. Are we going to accelerate our inner observer and our ability to see this trait that got us evolutionarily speaking to where we are as a very useful trait?
Right.
And now see its limitation. And again, that goes back to why I love this work. Mm-hmm. Because this work accelerates our ability to self-observe and listen to those voices. Mm-hmm. Because if you and I hadn't had those awful experiences, right. of telling them just to shut up, mm-hmm. we wouldn't understand how much they're constantly chatting at us. But when we can hear them and we can give ourselves some compassion and go, oh, wow, that was an interesting thing to just say to myself. Mm-hmm. We don't get to that place of self-compassion and holding those mean-spirited voices and working with them without hearing them. And that's what this story is about. It's a story of the characters that are that are waking up to this ability to hear and then choose how do they want to be with themselves so they can listen and hear what they have to say and not allow our inner voices, our inner drama to take us over and to interrupt our ability. Also know that we are very conscious, good human beings and support that part of ourselves.
Right. I was watching a comedian. I can't remember what his name is, but he was saying in one of his bits, like as he got older, he goes, sometimes it just slaps you in the face that you're getting older. And so he was relating how he was talking to some person who'd gone to his same high school. And then when they, you know, said when they graduated or when they said they were born was the same year he'd graduated from that same high school. And he was like, you know, it was kind of the real, he said, so I just went to my car and ate until I couldn't feel anymore. Right. And I was, and I was like, you know, I think, you know, for me, you know, at this phase of my life, I do numb myself more than I would like to numb myself with electronics, distractions, right? You know, so whether it's social media or games or just what news or whatever it is, I do find it more of a mental challenge for me, a little bit of depression, a little bit of isolation.
My daughter had it too. She's saying the same thing.
Yeah,
it's
I talked to
the emotional.
Yeah, I talked to some friends of mine, and from a had not COVID been a thing, I would have just thought I had a cold and was tired for a couple days. But then, yeah, the mental struggle's been really interesting. I was at dinner with, we were at dinner with three couples and including us and everybody at the table had it. And at least all of the men, now not necessarily the ladies at the table, but definitely the men all have experienced like this feeling of depression or this feeling of apathy or this feeling of like not being motivated. And maybe it's because we're just, you know, we're driven. And so it slowed things down so much that then we had to think about why are we driving? I mean, because that was ultimately the question that came up was like, what's life about and what are we doing here? And it kind of goes back to what you're talking about with the title of the book. That was why it was so entertaining to me is like, well, who do I want to be and how do I want to show up? Because am I just doing the things that I'm doing because that's a habitual habit? And when I mean doing the things I'm doing, I'm talking about work and, you know, the life I'm living. Is that just a habit? You know, something that I'm doing because I just inherited it or it just happened? Or is it something that I'm actively choosing? And I think that's kind of what you're talking about. Now we have this opportunity to shift,
have an opportunity.
Right? In this day and time. And you know, I always try to find the silver lining to stuff and say, okay, well, if COVID helped us, allowed us to reset that as a society or as the world, then that's probably a positive thing. And obviously, you know, people have died and I'm in the nursing home business and it was very traumatic for the elderly and for their families. And so I don't discount that. But at the same time, if there is a silver lining, maybe it's just that we have the opportunity. You know, it's just like the, what are they calling it? The great, where everybody's quitting their work. The great resignation. The great resignation.
Yes.
I think that's a big part of the great resignation. And I think that's why your book is so timely right now is, you know, who do I actually want to be? And then, and not only who do I want to be on the way to what I want, but also I probably don't know that I have the tools to make that shift. Right. And I think that's why the work you're talking about, why this work is so important, because it's really the, you know, I may want to be a carpenter. I may want to go build a house, but until I know how to use a hammer and a skill saw and, you know, some, I don't have the correct tools to build the house. So even though I have the desire, I think for a lot of people, they have the inner desire to change. But how do you change if you don't have I don't even like the word education, if you don't have the tools, right? And I think a lot of what you guys talk about in your work and in this book is kind of the, here's actually how to shift without it being like super painful.
Well, that's the story that I wrote about that's in the book. This isn't an intellectual exercise. This is a story about a master coach, Sophia, who gets a call from a very headstrong client, about 45-year-old woman who's a third-generation owner of her own construction business.
Oh, and I just randomly brought in the construction thing. So just know that that was divinely guided. I didn't know that it was about construction.
You didn't know that. Okay. But, I mean, I just created this story it's a prototype of one of my clients. Her name is RJ. And she's just gotten really terrible scores from her leadership team and knows that she needs a coach to go fix her leadership team. Well, the story starts with Sophia understanding a little bit about the expert mentality of RJ, that everyone else is the problem, black and white thinking. So they begin a coaching conversation, and over the arc of the story, Sophia explains the drama triangle and the roles, and RJ immediately sees, wow, I really am persecuting people. I had no idea. She wakes up to that. Gradually, Sophia shares more about the empowerment dynamic roles, and then a number of what I call TED tools, the empowerment dynamic tools, of really how to accelerate and give you the tools. As you just said, maybe I don't have the tools. Well, first of all, I think you very well do, Matt. You're very well resourced, and you care about it. That's one of the key things, is that you want to learn and grow, that challenger in us that wants to learn and grow. So the story offers, through listening to the dialogue of Sophia and RJ, and then Sophia has a coach, Tara, and we hear how the coach, the master coach, is coached by an elder of a local indigenous tribe. And we really hear the unity of language of Tara. And the story, I believe, at least the feedback I've been getting here very early on is that through a story and through the reader listening, how a master coach coaches, invites a very headstrong client to open her heart, to open up. There's lots of twists and turns. The story doesn't necessarily go with just a perfect happy ending. It's together how it's kind of my ministry, I'll say, in my aging days, to share what I've learned and to specifically share it through this continuum of moving from the drama triangle roles less and less in your life. We're always going to get triggered. We're always going to go back. But hopefully we see it faster so we can transform it sooner and keep moving our center of gravity where we live more often into the empowerment dynamic roles of creator, challenger, and coach. And one of the most important things is to actually believe you have this creator, intelligent, wise, good aspect to yourself is who you are. And when you really believe that, it's not just everyone else that embodies that essence, you do too. Now we have a different relationship with who do I want to be with that new knowledge? Do I really believe that? Because I can tell you, Matt, the people I coach, they believe everybody else has that creator essence, but not necessarily themselves. And it's shocking to them to tell that truth. And that can be the pivotal point of really deciding you want to treat yourself differently and you want to take on these tools that are in the book of how to help you live more fully and more consciously in the empowerment dynamic.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for, I can, in essence, start to feel kind of how that the writing and the story would help shift the perspective for the reader. I'm starting to get it. I'm a little slow, but I'm catching up. I'm going to get there. And so, you know, as we kind of come to the end of the show today, I do want to make sure what for somebody who's never really known much about this work and is just getting into it, I guess, what was the one thing, if this was the only piece of the whole thing that we released was this one thing, what's the one thing that you would want to make sure people understand when they're first starting with this type of work?
Yeah, to normalize this opening and this new awareness of seeing and hearing this inner critic. Because when we wake up and we start noticing it, we can really increase our personal warfare against ourselves. So the number one thing is listen to your inner dialogue with compassion, with deep self-compassion. And that's where I would start. Yes.
And as you say that, when you say normalized, for me, everybody on the face of the planet, no matter how evolved we think they are from the outside, has this element, has this inner critic, right? There is nobody escapes this, right? If you're,
well, I believe there are some cultures that we can be brought up in some cultures. In some religions where there is more of a persecuting, I'm sinful kind of culture.
Right.
And there are other cultures that are very love-based and have a deep sense of this creator essence. So, yes, but everyone has, in an evolutionary speaking, human dynamic. Yes.
And so, you know, if I'm sitting there with another human being in just a normal life, right, that... I am not unique And it is not just me that has this going on. I guess I want to make sure that everybody understands that, that this yes. inner critic isn't just the broken and the damned, or not just the people that are uniquely feeling it. You know, a lot of times I notice that these voices get louder when I feel alone or I've isolated myself to some degree, right? Then mm-hmm. then it kind of picks up a little bit. So it's not unique, this feeling, these voices, this drama, internal drama, is not unique to any one person. It's actually more, it's the normal. When you said normal, it's normal for everybody to have this experience. This isn't, I mean, I think
yes.
often, you know, we go into depression or we feel hard on ourselves because we think that it's just us, and it's never that somebody is experiencing that same, a lot of people are experiencing the same thing you're experiencing, even though they may mm-hmm. not be talking about it. You may not have an environment that's conducive to talking about it's okay, right? It's okay to feel this yes. way, and it's okay to shift into other ways of being.
Well, what's normal is that we have these three primary ways of dealing with anxiety that we have about how we've looked out at the world, looked at ourselves, and we've deemed something a problem. We said, well, there's something here we don't like and we don't want. Right. And it's not so much whatever that is mm-hmm. out there.
Right.
It's our anxiety and the story we make up about it. And depending on the extent of the story we make about, like, oh, I'll never have those beautiful gardens, I made up quite a big story about right. that and caused myself a lot of anxiety. So what we react to, what's normal that we react to, is the anxiety we create from the story we make up about life.
Interesting.
And it's normal to respond to that if we go unconscious.
Right.
If we go unconscious, we either feel victim-y, oh, I don't want this, I didn't really want that dream after all, or we, you know, lean in and we do these three roles. What I'm suggesting is that we must accelerate our ability to see these patterns and to go numb, like the guy that went to the car and just ate himself right. until he felt
right,
numb.
Right.
So now he's not going to see his pattern.
Right, right.
What I'm loving about the drama triangle is it accelerates our ability to self-observe our pattern, and now we have a choice. Ah, do I really want to keep those habits going? And if we numb ourselves, like that long list that you listed, we're not going to learn from when we get triggered.
Right.
I really work with coaching, and one of the TED tools is to become much more trigger intelligent. Know what triggers you, because that's where the gold lies. What upsets us is something about, we got triggered about something we care about. I got upset because I actually care about the beauty of flowers.
Right.
And I triggered myself, but when I could stop, that's where the gold is to learn. And so yes, it's normal, Matt, but it's normal if we can hold it. And how do we want to be with this
right.
and learn from it so that we can continue to make more empowered, more beautiful choices for ourselves? But then, as you say in your example, you're sitting across from someone. Now we have an opportunity to get really curious mm-hmm. about what's life like for them.
Right.
As they've gone through their life choices, whoever knows what family mm-hmm. issues mm-hmm. they have, childhood issues, trauma issues. Now we can quiet our judgment of the other and get really curious. Wonder what it's like to be you. And
right.
deeply listen. That's the coach in us that wants to deeply listen. So it's simple, and yeah, there's a lot of layers and complexity that can really help us update our human operating system.
Fascinating, fascinating stuff. Fascinating work. So I feel honored and privileged to know both you and David and be able to learn from your work and just the constant evolving of the work. I think it's very good stuff.
Well, thank you.
Sure. So if you haven't caught on by now, the title of the book is Who Do You Want to Be on the Way to What You Want? It's available on Amazon and anywhere that you buy books. How else is it best to reach out to you if people had more questions about the work, about the book yeah. or coaching? You know, is there a website
yeah.
or something we
thank
can
you.
Help people become more aware of what you do?
Yeah. Our company is called the Center for the Empowerment Dynamic. Center for the Empowerment Dynamic. And if you Google that, you'll go right to our website. We have some classes. I teach a lot of coaching classes more for professional mm-hmm. coaches, not for mm-hmm. what I'd say beginning coach training is not something that I do. We have an e-course. David has two books out, The Empowerment Dynamic, which is the basic kind of book that kicked all this off that you mm-hmm. first read mm-hmm. 15 years ago. Yep. There's another book he has written called Three Vital Questions, mm-hmm. Transforming Workplace Drama, which is a setting inside organizations, because more and more companies are using this work for team development, mm-hmm. for coaching with leaders to help, again, accelerate our ability to self-observe and choose. How do we want to bring our best self to work every day? Donna at powerofted.com
okay.
Is an email. But I think the best thing is to go to our website. And yes, the book has just been published. It's in all three formats, mm-hmm. Kindle, Audible, print. And I'm really excited about bringing it to the message to the world.
Well, excellent.
Thank you, Matt, for your good work.
Yes, of course. Well, we look forward to having you back on the show and learning as it evolves and as you have more adventures. And I'm sure, you know, it will bring people to you that will be new and unique and have great stories. And we'd love for you to come back on in the future and share those with us. So
thank you, Matt.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for being a part of the Bright Vibe podcast. For more information, go to brightvibe.com. That's BRITE vibe, VIBE.com. Thank you for listening.